Simon David, Chapter 7, continued. But life is for living, and whatever befalls us, there is little purpose in throwing away the future because we have misused or neglected the past. Forgiveness is not a negative thing, it is the springboard for renewed action in the service of the God who grants it. The reins of responsibility were still in David's hands, and he could not shed them. Like great men before him, he had to resume the contest for life. The scripture record held many exhortations which showed that past sins are no bar to victorious living. Abraham's weakness in Egypt, or his urge to self-fulfillment of the promises when he took Hagar to wife, did not prevent faithful service in the land of hope and eventual begettal of the promised seed. Jacob's deceit to secure the blessing was no permanent obstacle to the true blessing which he afterward received, both from his father and his God. The battle in Rabbah of the Ammonites was not over. The city, which is the modern city Amman, was on the bank of a river, and like other cities of its time, probably consisted of two parts, an upper and a lower. Such a construction might arise from the hilly nature of the site on which the city was built, or, and this is a more likely reason, because part of the city was more strongly fortified to withstand a siege. It may be, of course, that the two parts of the city were not built at the same time, and that natural development over the years had necessitated an extension of city boundaries. Joab's attack was a prolonged one. The land had been overrun, and the capital was then exposed to a siege. The soldiers of Israel managed to capture the lower city, known, it would seem, as the City of Waters, 2 Samuel 12, verse 27. The upper city was beginning to yield to constant pressure of the attack. Joab sent a message to David. It was curt, barbed, and slightly threatening. "Gather the rest of the people together and encamp against the city and take it, lest I take the city and it be called after my name." These are scarcely the words of a general to his monarch, and they indicate Joab's new attitude, and were the first of many a rebuke which, spoken or otherwise, would come David's way. Joab's letter to David was a great deal better than the letter which David had sent to Joab concerning Uriah. The king suffered the veiled threat, gathered his remaining forces together, and went personally to battle. Nothing is said of his meeting with Joab, nothing of the message which lay in Joab's gaze, or of the deep contrition which lay in David's heart. He had come to Rabbah, where Uriah had died. It is said that murderers return to the scene of their crimes as though drawn irresistibly by some strong fascination. But such was not David's journey. He came because conscience would not allow him to be away. He came to join the ark of the Lord against his enemies. It would seem that the ark of the Lord went out to battle as a symbol of the Lord's presence amongst the men of Israel. One might gather the impression that, in the days of Eli, there was sin simply in bringing forth the ark to a field of warfare. However, a careful reading of the record in 1 Samuel 4 indicates that the sin lay in the belief that the ark itself, as distinct from the presence of God, would save them. "Let us fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh amongst us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies." There was little point in bringing the ark if they'd left God behind. To bring the ark as a sign of one's faith in God is altogether a different matter. And in the days when the ark journeyed with Israel into the wilderness, Moses had said, as the ark was set forward, "Rise up, O Lord, and let thine enemies be scattered, and let them that hate thee flee before thee." At God's command, the ark had been taken in the great march around Jericho before the walls fell down. The Philistines were afraid when the ark came into the battlefield. "Woe unto us! Who shall deliver us out of the hands of these mighty gods?" These are the gods which smote the Egyptians with all manner of plagues. Rabbah fell to David's attack. The people were humiliated, and many were done to death by cruel means. The king of the Ammonites was brought forth, and the royal crown, a heavy work of gold and precious stones, was transferred to David's head. So for a time at least, the power of Ammon was broken. They were a fierce and heartless nation, and their god Molech was a source of much idolatry in Israel. Moses had warned them against the terrible practices which were involved in the worship of Molech, otherwise known as Milcom, or their king. Thou shalt not let any of thy seed pass through the fire to Molech. Offering children in the fire, perhaps into the fiery arms of the god itself, was what the record in Kings describes as being, after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. 1 Kings 11 verse 5. The cruel punishments meted out to them were in keeping with their own wicked behaviour, and were a suitable rebuke at the hands of the Lord's men. The victorious army returned to Jerusalem, headed by the king. And there is little doubt that the triumph was somewhat sour in the mind of the king, who would also always associate Rabbah and Ammon with something he would rather forget. Meanwhile, David's marriage to Bathsheba took a happier turn, and there's every sign that David sought hard to console and to care for the wife who came to him by wrong means, and whose future lay in his hands. After the death of the first child, when sorrow upon sorrow seemed to be Bathsheba's lot, hope sprang again with the promise of another child. As Nathan had appeared at the birth of the first son, so now he appeared at the birth of the second. And he came with another message from the Lord, an antidote to the melancholy and fear, a sign of divine favour restored. Nathan called the new son Jedidiah, meaning beloved of the Lord. And the record adds that Nathan did this for the Lord's sake. His parents had called him Peaceful One, or Solomon. Wrapped in the naming of this little one were promises of another son of David, the one who would truly come for the Lord's sake, the beloved son, the Peaceful One, the man of rest. Bathsheba was comforted, and David sensed the restoration of divine favour.